Accession number 28673, Mr. Don Mitchard, Reel 10. Now, could you tell us about some of the early operations you did after joining 72 Squadron? That was at Ayr in September 1942, yeah. I believe.
That's right. Yes, well, when I joined the squadron, it more or less replaced 165 Squadron there, which I was in before. And we were doing, we were fully operational. Our operational flying consisted of a lot of convoy duties of all the Americans coming in across from America in the Queens and the big ships, and going up the Firth of Clyde rather, and also of course we were on standby scrambling and defence. But in between, the squadron it was quite a mobile squadron. We used to move around quite a lot, and I think because probably Air Ministry or the people, the powers that be in those days, used us as a sort of a stand-in backup type of squadron. And what would happen if there was anything down here in 11 Group down south that was happening? Then we would come down and maybe stay for a few days at a certain airfield and do an operational. So I found that I was, in fact, apart from the defensive stuff in an air, doing operational flying over the continent. That was the time when we were taking the fight to the to the Germans and going across there, and we were doing, the RAF were doing a lot of fighter sweeps, as they
now
were
where
called.
Would you be based when you did that? So you'd move.
Well,
south.
It moved around. You see, we come down. I've been to several places: Biggin Hill, Tangmere, Manston. Yeah, but what we used to do, if there was something special, we would fly in for a couple of days, and after the operation, fly back again or fly somewhere else. So we were rather mobile. I think we were probably, they used us as a mobile squadron, I think. But we were at Biggin Hill for a while. So what we were doing on the offensive side of things was the operational sweeps over France. And
now, what was a typical operational sweep over France like? Take us through one of them.
Yes, okay. We would have first of all we would go to briefing, when we would be told exactly what was going on, how many squadrons were involved, and what our job was, and then.
How much detail would they go into? I mean, would it give you a formation and things like that? You'd be flying in.
Well, we knew what formation we'd been flying in because we had been training and practicing that. We flew in. Do you want me to detail that? In what was really at the time was three lines of line astern of four, one in the middle and two either side. The idea was that it was, first of all, we didn't fly in close formation. That was a lesson that we had learned since World War One, because they started off by doing that, but you daren't fly in close formation.
Now, why not?
Because you were vulnerable, both from the air and from the ground. I mean, because, you know, if somebody was flying close to you and you got hit with an anti-aircraft shell, it could probably bugger the other one up as well, couldn't it? Wouldn't it? So, but we used to fly in three lines of line astern. The middle line of four was led by the squadron commander. He was Red 1. And then there was Red 2, Red 3 was a section leader, and Red 4. On his left was, I'm trying to think whether it was blue or yellow. It's blue, I think, on the left. Similar. And that was one of the flight commanders would be leading that group, and the other flight commander leading the four on the right, which would be the yellow section, probably. And we were in pairs, really, because it was always felt that certainly when we were operational flying, that it was best to be in twos. If you got split up, for goodness sake, if you can, keep together with one other person, because you could look after each other. So that's how the unit went. Now, a bit later on, I'll just jump a bit in when formations. It was developed into what they called finger four formation. That was something which was brought about by our friend Douglas Bader and Johnny Johnson and company. They felt, instead of flying in 1, 2, 3, 4 in complete line astern, that you would fly like that. 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, slightly staggered.
In echelon, slightly in echelon.
Well, yes, echelon one way and the other way. So it was, the point it was that you got a lot more visibility like that and you weren't quite so vulnerable. So they were the ones that decided finger four, but it wasn't an awful lot of difference from three lines of line astern. But the whole idea was that, you see, if you got into a dogfight, as they would call it, dogfights, and really great passes at each other, really, the thing was that if you got hit by anybody, always, if you were hit, it was one you didn't see. Because if you could see the chap that was firing at you, he wasn't going to hit you. Can you see, you know? Because if you're turning like that and you can see him, he can't get his deflection round. So it was always that if the chap you didn't see that hit you. So the whole idea was to weave, and because we were able to weave ourselves to keep an eye on the tower, and your number two or number one, if you were flying number two, would keep an eye on you as well.
Now, so after the briefing, what next on this?
Yes.
Sort of,
well, then
operation.
We'd have the briefing, and then if we're talking about a fighter sweep. By the way, the other operation we used to do sometimes, of course, was escorting bombers. But I'll talk about fighter sweeps for a moment.
Fighter sweep first.
We would know what height we were going to fly, what position we were going to take up. And generally, by this time, it was the theory of which you may have heard about, the big wing, had come into use.
What was the big wing theory?
Well, the big wing was something that was brought about by the people in 12 Group, Douglas Bader and his Air Commodore, I forget, Air Officer Commanding. They said that really having a small group of fighters in the air wasn't a lot of good. You know, it wasn't very useful. So they decided that to do anything effectively, it would have to be done by what they called the big wing. In other words, lots of squadrons and airplanes all in the air at the same time as a big unit. Okay? So we would be told where, we'd be briefed to what part of the wing we were in, and we would all take off at a certain rendezvous somewhere over the south coast, quite often at Selsey or at further along where the White Cliffs are. I've forgotten the name of the place now. But you'd have a rendezvous point and a height, and the big wing, as it would be, would set off towards northern France as a unit. Over in France, there were two German fighter centres, which were most of their, like we had 11 Group, they had one was at Saint-Omer, and the other was at It's one of the names that I know quite well. So I'll come. I'll remember it in a minute. So we knew that wherever we went near there, that they would be the one that would be scrambled against us. And the Germans used to come up, and the whole idea of a fighter sweep was to get them to get in the air, and we were trying to establish air superiority. So we wanted them to get up and have a scrap with us. Now, the Germans aren't daft. They would only do it if they felt they were getting some advantage themselves. But usually, when we went on a sweep, there would be some action or another. Usually, it would just finish up with a sort of dogfight. I'm saying dogfight because dogfight was a term used, but it wasn't quite the same as the dogfights in World War One.
So what sort of, how would you provoke them into taking off if they didn't want to take off? We'll come to the dogfight. I mean, would you actually do anything, or would they just see you and eventually?
No, we would just fly over there, and if it was just a fighter sweep, we would just fly over there and expect them to come up and have a go at us. Now, if they didn't, then we would say, right, well, we've got an advantage here. That's to us. But they always did, of course. But they always scrambled people. But they didn't always attack you. The Germans, as I say, are sensible. If they thought they were at a big disadvantage, they've got more sense than that, the Germans, unfortunately. But it usually developed into a bit of a scrap.
Now, what was a dogfight, as you call it? Mm. What was it like?
Well, it was really a series of passes each other. Now, as we were flying over it, as we were doing the offensive bit, we would expect them to attack us. So what they would do, they would try and get height advantage. Because that is one of the things that in dogfighting, I call it, that you really need is height advantage. And they would usually, because they were over there and they knew we were coming, they would get high as they could, always into the sun, so that you couldn't see them too well. But I think we kind of developed, I say we as a, well, I suppose I did as well. You developed a sixth sense of being able to see them or have an idea where they might be. And what would happen was we knew they would attack us if they had height advantage. They weren't so keen if they didn't. If they had height advantage, we knew they would attack us and we knew that they would come out of the sun. Because that is difficult to see them when you're in got a blazing sun. And what used to happen was that we would be flying along and we would, if we saw any German fighters up in the sky above us in the sun or whatever, we would report that to the leader. And we would say, red one, blue four here. Bandits, it's 12 o'clock high or whatever, and the CO might see them, and then he'd say, well, keep an eye on them. And what used to happen was that by that time we would probably be watching them, and when they dived to attack us, which they always did, you always when you broke formation at an appropriate time, and the leader would say, okay, steady. And at some appropriate time, if he knew they were coming from, if we were going along from the left high, he would say, break left. Now, you always broke formation towards them, not away. If you see these films, you see them turning away. Well, that, of course, would be disastrous, because if you're flying and turn away, they're on your tail, aren't they? And if you turn towards them and you're turning, they can't possibly hit you, because they've got to get a deflection in front of you. And that's why I was saying you've got to be able to see them. So I think this was where we as a squadron, and all squadrons were the same, used to practice this a lot, that we would know when to break. And if the CO said break left, we would know, we'd break in pairs.